Miss Yuka was standing in front of her desk when she began to brush a small piece of lint off her skirt just above her right knee, and Harold wondered if there was more lint in China than in the United States, and wondered if it mattered, and if so, how.
That's the opening sentence from Stephen Wright's debut novel. Stephen is one of the most innovative and imaginative stand-up comedians of all time. He comes in at number 15 on Rolling Stone's 50 Best Stand-Up Comics of All Time list. I'd say that's not high enough. For my money, what little I have, I would put Stephen in the top three. But I digress. Stephen's novel is called Harold. It focuses on a third-grade student named Harold, who is growing up during the 1960s. You could say that Harold's brain never shuts off. He's constantly having intriguing, mind-bending thoughts which arrive in the form of birds that fly into his brain. So how does Stephen think sitting down and focusing changed the way he came up with ideas?
When I started writing Harold, I began to daily sit down on purpose and focus for 2 hours, getting high on coffee and focusing, what could this kid be doing? What could happen here? So that was another whole other way of creating for me, to sit on purpose and focus like that. And there were things came out of my mind that I never knew was in there if I hadn't done that.
Right. Was it kind of strange to go from telling jokes on stage to hundreds of people to writing prose with nobody there to react to your work? Was that kind of a strange experience?
It was different, but it wasn't strange. Because when you think about it, it's writing, it's just thinking. I mean, I've been writing for 40 years, but stand-up. But so this was more writing, but it wasn't stand-up. But it was still, it wasn't strange. It was just a different thing. I got to write things that weren't funny, like describing the room, describing people. That was a lot of fun for me, because everything, of course, is not a joke in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about your protagonist, Harold. He's 7 years old and he's in the third grade. What else can you tell us about him?
He despises that he's in school. He despises that the teacher is in charge. He thinks it's, the country is based on freedom and this is a dictatorship right here that he goes to every single day. It's a total hypocrite thing. He has a crush on my girl, Elizabeth. But he's looking out the window and he's seeing trees and he's seeing a funeral go by and he's just wondering. He's a wondering, it says in there, he's a wondering machine. I mean, I wonder a lot too. I wonder a lot like a child, but not as much as a child. A child is like they got off a spaceship, they were dropped here and they don't know anything. And they're like looking at everything like scientists, they're automatic scientists. He's a nice person, though, I think. But he has
very likable.
Thank you. And I like the violent, he has the violent images of tying the teacher up to a pole with wolves all around it. And,
Yeah. But Harold's brain never seems to stop thinking. And I'm curious, is that the way your own brain operates? Are you constantly thinking? Is your brain constantly in overdrive?
It's thinking, but in a very casual way. I mean, I don't think you could stop thinking, anyone, even if you try to. But I'm not thinking oh my God, I gotta do something to calm it down. Oh my God. It's just like a casual river, just flowing, And the part about in the book where he's describing the inside of his head is like a indoor sky and there's thousands of birds that each represent a thought. And when they go through the little rectangle in his head, it's like a picture frame or a window frame with nothing in it. When the bird goes through that, then that's the subject he thinks of. I thought of that as an analogy years before I was writing Harold. And then I thought, well, I'll just put this in here. And now that enabled me to change the subject constantly because of the birds, putting a logic into it. But your mind, everyone's mind, I think, goes you're walking down the street and all of a sudden you're wondering where does Bobby Orr live now?
yeah, that's one of the great features of your book was the recurring, these cameo appearances throughout your novel that birds make and just the way they enter Harold's brain. One of my favorite Harold thoughts deals with the invention of color film and black and white film. Can you share that with us?
Yes, well, as I was writing it, things would come into my mind that I thought of years ago that had nothing to do with Harold. They weren't stand-up thoughts. They were just general. You know, I thought, I know the logistics of black and white to come first technically, but I used to think, well, you know, like, color should have come first if you put aside the technical aspects of it, because color is really how everything looks. So black and white is an abstraction, and you would think that that came second. Like, you know, like Salvador Dali could paint very realistically, and then he went into the surrealism. I know it's not really logical, but that's how I kind of saw it, is like in a kidding way. And then the guy who in the book, the guy who invented color film, lives across the street from the guy who invented black and white film, and at the same time, and they have an arm. I think they arm wrestle to decide.
That's great. That whole idea is great. That's such a mind bending and such an addictive idea because it's like the opposite of what Ted Turner did, like back in the late 80s, and early 90s, when he was colorizing all the black and white movies, and then there was that great outbreak and how dare he do that kind of thing.
Yeah,
I was very intrigued about the fact that Harold repeatedly throughout your book has many thoughts about the Lakota people. Can you share a few of those thoughts with us?
I've always been fascinated by the Indians. I've been fascinated by what was here before the white man came. And about 6-7 years ago, I was in Logan Airport in Boston before I went on the plane, and I saw this book in the store called In the Heart of Everything. It was about the great Lakota chief, Red Cloud. He organized the Indians into one big giant army so they could collectively fight the white man. And I loved the book. I just loved the idea of what was happening before. You know, all this madness is something I love about it. So I'm writing Harold, and I'm not thinking, oh, I need to put the Lakota in. It's like, and it's like your mind is skipping around, like I said, the birds, you know, and then I think, oh, the Lakota. Oh, I have the Lakota in. Because then I get to have the perspective of them in there, like when he meets his grandfather in Rapid City, meets some Lakota because they're building an airport after Pearl Harbor. And so his grandfather knows some Lakota, and he says Lakota thought that a planetarium was insane, like that only the white man would build an indoor sky and then charge money to look at it. But why they're in there, the Lakota, is because they just came into my head from reading the book 6 years ago. It just leaked into my head, and then I liked that they were in there, and then they kept being in there.
I loved that they were in there. I thought that was one of the highlights of the book. No, thank you. You mentioned Harold's grandfather. I wanted to ask you, they have a really interesting, a really nice, solid relationship between the two of them. Can you tell us a bit about that?
I've always thought that it wasn't based on my grandfather or a real person at all. I just think that a kid who's starting out in the world, he's 7, he hasn't gone into all the madness yet. And the old guy has gone all the way around all the madness, and he's going to be going out of the world soon. And I think they have a similar perspective in the sense that the old guy sees that it's all bullshit, and he's just fed up with it. And he almost sees the world so simply because he's went through all the thinking of figuring everything out, and then he realizes it's all just so really simple. And the kid sees it simple too. And I just thought that they had a connection, like a circle. If you had a circle that doesn't connect, like on 3 inches apart, like one part that doesn't connect is the 7-year-old and the other part is the 70-year-old guy. So they're really near each other, but the circle represents the whole world that the guy went through and that Harold will go through.
Yeah, exactly. There's a very interesting scene, or I guess we could call it a sequence, of Harold on the moon, having a meal on the moon. Can you talk a bit about this?
I don't know. Just one day I imagined a cafe on the moon that was just tables. It was just from trying to write something that day, and my mind just... I don't know why I had a cafe on the moon, just tables and chairs, and then that waitress is on there. And then I loved the visual of this little boy up there looking back at the Earth. I don't know why. It just kind of happened. Were you seeing it when you were reading it? Did you see it in your head?
Yeah, I did. And I thought it was very cinematic. And I think when I was reading those passages, it made me think of when we spoke last time, you talked about how you wanted to make a full-length film. You've made some films, including an Academy Award winner, but you wanted to make a full-length movie. And I kind of wondered, did writing Harold sort of scratch that itch? Or do you still want, you know what I mean? Because in a way, it was kind of a movie, you know, written, directed, acted by you, kind of.
Yes, it did. Because I think so visually all the time, even the jokes. There's even a reference in the Harold where when the girl is way, way far away, the girl, Tinga, she's running across, I think it says like a long shot, like a David Lean shot. Mm-hmm. You know, it even says that because I love his movies. But it did give me an itch to make a film, but in the sense that I don't even know really what I'm doing.
You don't think so? I would disagree with that. Well, I think you know what you're doing.
Well, I mean, what I mean is I'm going by my gut. I was just like, okay, maybe this. Okay, yeah, maybe this. So I was just going by my gut with this book, the length, what was everything. So that made me trust my gut even more, like, which makes me think of maybe trying a movie because of I know you say it looks like I know what I'm doing, but I'm just, it's not planned. I don't think like, oh, now he should say funny things. Oh, now there should be, I just was going by my gut. Now there should be something in the class now. Like now it should change to a dream or a daydream. Like from the stand-up, you learn to keep the audience's attention. There's different ways besides what you're saying. Change the subject, change where you walk around, change where you're just standing there, change playing the guitar or not playing the guitar, you know. So you learn all these things to keep their attention. I guess I know what I'm doing, but I just write it off as gut. But yes, I know what I'm doing.
The dust jacket copy for your book says that this novel will change the way you perceive your daily existence. And I think that it did have that effect on me. Has it had that effect on you? Has writing Harold changed the way you perceive your daily existence?
No, it hasn't. But it just made me trust what I'm doing. It made me trust it more, like we were talking about before, the gut. It made me think, you know, because, you know, I know you think I know completely what I'm doing, but that's part of me doesn't. I only know what I'm doing to a certain part level. So the part that the book is working makes me think, well, my gut is pretty good.
Are you planning to write another book?
I don't know, really. I maybe probably someday, but what this book itself, since it's all over now, took years to do, and now it's out. Now I'm talking about it. It's like I'm coming out of a tunnel. That's not a negative thing. Coming out of a tunnel, and my mind is like opening up. Like now, okay, now what are we gonna do? You know, I'm not even trying to think what I'm gonna do. I just know that the creative part of me wants to do something else. I don't know what it is yet, though. Maybe it'll be a film thing. I don't know, but it's a it's exciting. Creating is thinking. It's like playing to me, like a child doing finger paints. It's very playful. I don't put a lot of pressure on it. Like when I was writing that Harold, I didn't have a book deal at the time. I was writing it for years before they even got involved. And I was just amusing myself. And I wasn't thinking like, how will people look at this? I had a lot of fun writing it.
Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of fun reading it. Stephen Wright, congratulations on Harold. It's an unforgettable, very funny, and very thought-provoking novel. Thank you very much for writing it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Comedian Stephen Wright on his debut novel, Harold. Find out more about Stephen and Harold at wpr.org/beta.
People don't join cults that are already horrific and crazed and spiral-eyed. People join utopias.
Coming up,
Guinevere Turner joins us to talk about growing up as a member of the Lyman family cult. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.